Hello, this is Buddy and Carol with Living Reliably Happy with Admirable Friends.
Good evening, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.
And this is our first time doing radio, Carol, so I guess we have to give it our best.
It's pretty exciting. I'm trying not to be too giddy about it. I'm trying to be very serious.
You think anybody's out there listening to us? Or is it just you and I talking like in the morning?
It could be you and I just talking like in the morning. This is okay.
Well, the first thing I think we should do is state our gratitude. So, what are we grateful for?
Well, I don't know about you, but I'm grateful for the opportunity to start this new journey tonight with our listening audience of admirable friends on the radio. So, and our new best friend, Doug.
Yeah, I was going to say from the BBS radio.
Yes.
They, in a day's time, they helped get us from what wasn't work, a GoToMeeting format. We had two technical difficulties into a radio talk show. These guys were great, and a time opened up like there was a wave, parting of the seas. It was a 5 o'clock West, California time opened that fit us right in to their show, and they were really great, so I too am grateful for that situation. I'm grateful for all of you that practice on the road to reliable happiness. And tonight's show is on goodwill. And we mail out to our list of callers a material, program material, and Doug has been gracious enough to set up on the website, bbsradio.com/admirablefriends, the actual program material, the program handouts, and tonight's material, for those of you that might be listening that didn't get emailed, can just go to the webpage, bbsradio.com/admirablefriends, and under the program handouts, download the Living Reliably Goodwill.
Where would you like to start tonight? You want to start with the recap from lesson 2 on discernment that we did last time?
Yes, let's cover lesson 2 with discernment. And I guess the format we used to do on the GoToMeetings was we kind of talked for a half an hour, and then we opened it up for questions and calls. But I think in this format, if their calls come, we should take them.
We should.
Is that okay?
Mm-hmm.
So those of you that are listening, and even during the recap on discernment from last week, Carol and I are going to try to interact versus going at it separately, and take each subject matter and give it our two cents. So, Carol, why don't you start off with discernment?
Well, actually, I was going to let you do the recap from lesson 2.
Okay.
If that's okay.
That's no problem at all. So, discernment is a fundamental quality that we talked about on the Aim to Reliable Happiness, because it is first and foremost that wisdom capacity that allows us to look deeply into issues, as well as 360 around us before we make decisions. It's a sequence of investigation. It's a quality of investigation, discernment. We talked about different ways to build that quality in listening and reading, as well as thinking both individually and with others, and lastly, developing it, developing discernment. We reviewed the difference between judgmental and judicious. Remember that, Carol?
I did. That really brought things into focus for me. I tend to be a little more on the judgmental side than the judicious side, so that was really very timely for me.
And how do you see that, judgmental versus judicious?
Well, I do tend to take it personally, so that's where I... It's good for me to take out the personal, you know, the personal attachment to the action. I'm trying to separate myself personally from it and just look at it for what it is, just the straight action.
So when you hear the word judgment, you think personal. You're taking it personal.
Yes. Yes, because it's usually something that goes along the line of, that's not right, I don't think that's right, exclamation point.
And there again is how we're different. So when I think of judgment versus judicious, to me, judgment is fast. It's a speed issue. It's not a personal issue. I rush to judgment. Discern, I kind of look at things slower, look over them, a little more careful, a little more patient. Both, I think, cut across at what we were trying to bring about last week. We actually brought up some examples of discernment, if you remember that, with the potter and the basket weaver. And that whole idea of building skill, you know, the skillfulness side of discernment.
I thought that was a good example. Both of those were, especially for people that have hobbies or crafts or do things that require them to kind of look at their craft along the way and then make a decision whether, well, I likened it to crocheting. You know, I'll start to crochet and then I might just rip out a row or something because I didn't like the way it looked or I didn't quite have the right stitch that I was looking for. But I didn't beat myself up, of course, because I ripped it out. You know, it's like I learned and I went on and without any residue, nothing was sticking from behind. I didn't, you know, for the next half hour while I was crocheting, I didn't think about the row number, you know, 17.
Yes. Okay, and lastly, we kind of concluded with discernment and how it kind of affected everything else and had to do with other mind qualities. And for a moment before, you know, we've got to take into consideration that there might be new listeners to the whole program.
Sure.
So let's just back up a little bit and talk a little bit about the road to reliable happiness. And we covered this format of this radio show is going to be 10 different programs that we'll do concurrently, starting with number one, working through 10, basically using these 10 mind qualities as our guide. The road to reliable happiness. Carol, what's reliable happiness mean to you versus, well, just what does reliable happiness mean to you?
Well, to have that inner compass to rely on, not to be at the whim of every external thing that bombards me from the minute I get up in the morning to the minute I close my eyes at night.
Is that the cork in the ocean?
It is. It's that, all I can think of is that little, when we were kids fishing, that little red and white bobber, you know, that just floats around and it's like, bing, bing. And, but that's how I think of.
So it's reliable, meaning that you're not.
Consistent contentment.
Consistent.
Just kind of that, not as highs and lows of stress, not so stressed out and frazzled and just bombarded, I think, by all that external stuff that we see every day when we walk out the door.
Well, in my case, reliable is more of an inner calming quality of happiness. I chased happiness for most of my adult life through buying things, enjoying trips, pleasures. Not that I still don't enjoy those things, but it was the chase that got tiring and stressful. And of course, the casualties along the way. So to me, it's an inner thing versus an outer happiness. It's a happiness that's drawn from a combination of what happens outside and how we respond internally. If I can respond reliably to that wave or that those external stimuli that inevitably are stressful conditions, then that's pretty reliable. So if I can work on my ability to respond, that's something that's 100% up to me, the way I look at it. And that's something I can work towards to be reliably happy. Clearly, that isn't the way I experience every day.
No, but I think you can agree that there wasn't like a plan or a call to action or something laid out where it gave you kind of this map, roadmap to reliable happiness. I mean, like you have with the mind qualities.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, I was thinking a lot of my father when he was dying and went on to say that, buddy, you knew all along you what's right and what's wrong and what's good for you if you just quiet enough and look internally. That's what's helped is learning how to quiet the mind and pay attention to the response side. And that's something that I think we can all work towards. So I'm very encouraged about this road to reliable happiness. As long as we can have conversations with others, because it's not normal, is it? When we meet everybody all day long, this discussion about how we respond to stress doesn't seem to be the topic that's being discussed.
No.
It's whose stress is bigger than somebody else's stress. I got
sure.
a story for you. I can one-up you.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
won't believe this guy. Cut across me on when I went to Starbucks, and Jesus, she was ordering something at the thing, and you know, that's normal, the conversation. So this conversation, the shifting the conversation, this admirable friendship that we're looking at developing, is an interesting approach. It's not normal, and it takes a group, because you and I have had this conversation for some time.
Mm-hmm.
I remember one day that when we were building horse property and developing, there was one particular landowner that was driving us crazy. And we used to wake up every morning and talk about her and say what a real pain in the neck she was. And then we had that insight one day, is this all there is? Is this, we're just going to talk about this person every morning?
Yeah, it was crazy.
It was
just absolutely lunacy.
Do you remember that day?
I do. And it just like, there's got to
be. Don't mention
more.
Her name. It's on the air.
I certainly wouldn't.
Okay. But it was like, is this all life is going to be? Is we're
right.
just going to whine about this person?
And there's more
person.
To it than that. You just said there's got to be something
there's
more.
There's
got to
be
just...
something more, is what you said to me. And that was a huge turning point for us. It's like, we got to find something that really is reliable, that we can enjoy, versus that there's, you know, the thing is if you have one of these people, it seems like they used to come over the mountain. You knock one down, you solve a problem, and there comes another one over the mountain with that, with a problem. So that's the way it went. And I hope that gives the new listeners an opportunity to understand what this road is about, what we're heading towards. And we're trying to do it with conversations. And in particular, the rules of the game of conversation is basically one pool rule. That primary rule is what, Carol?
Speak in the first person.
Speak in the first person.
Because that's from experience.
Yeah.
Because everybody has that experience that they can share.
What happened to me? What happened to my stress during the day?
How I handled it, or
how
I didn't
it.
Handle it, or how I learned from it.
So I think stress is a good starting point, because we all experience it. We
sure.
can all touch with it. So all we ask is our callers, when they call in, to say, this is what I'm incurring. And you can talk anonymously, so you don't have to, you know, you can even use a stage name if you like. But what we really want to know is the story and how you shifted the conversation, what dialogue you had in your head. Share that with the group. And always we want to share this information. And this gets us right into goodwill, right? With the intention of helping others.
Sure.
I mean, yes, we're calling here to help ourselves, but when we all relate our storyline, when there's multiple listeners all coming at it from different perspectives,
mm-hmm.
it's a higher probability that we all learn, because we're hearing it differently from different
mm-hmm.
people.
Sure.
So, Carol, I'm going to turn it over to goodwill. Let's get right into the subject matter here.
Well, tonight's lesson is a continuation of our 10 ideal mind qualities. Remembering that these are grouped, we've spoken before about how these 10 ideal mind qualities are grouped into four headings. The first heading being wisdom, the second heading being truth, the third heading being letting go, and the fourth heading being calming. And last week we discussed discernment, which is... what we talked about discernment was the ability to think past the mere perception or aggregate of experience and evaluate it on a detailed basis, including making mistakes without personal guilt or remorse. And so that was under the wisdom heading. And so we discussed that last week, and we're going to stay in that wisdom group and discuss goodwill. And I always like to start off with the definition. So the definition of goodwill is the skillful desire for us and or others to find and act upon the causes of reliable happiness. And when I read that, I thought, well, you know, you can break that down even to more detail in that let's just say it's the skillful desire for us to find and act upon the causes of reliable happiness, the skillful desire for others to find and act upon the causes of reliable happiness. So I think I mentioned to you also that it was kind of funny. I looked at goodwill as sort of like being this gem with all these facets, you know, how a diamond is cut has all these different facets in how you look at it, and that's what gives it its light and gives it its clarity and color and all the vibrancy of it. So I kind of want to take that and segue into goodwill as being, there's a few elements or facets that contribute to the skillfulness of goodwill. And the first one...
So we're going to discern through goodwill.
Yes.
Okay, go.
We are. So the first kind of facet is training the mind is an act of goodwill. And when you think about training the mind as being an act of goodwill, you might kind of say, well, I don't... What's that all about? But when you think about how we develop ourselves, when we develop ourselves and we read good content and we speak to admirable friends, we're really kind of stockpiling our reliable happiness bank account, so to speak. You know, we're getting that reliable happiness. And that, as we elevate ourselves, we also elevate and lead by example and help others.
Yes.
To be reliably happy. So I think it's sort of like a you're drafting. You know, when you're doing something good for yourself as far as training your mind, other people can draft off of you. They feel that kind of energy.
And as usual, you go to the positive side, and I'm going to go to the negative side.
Okay, go ahead.
So, to me, when I read training the mind is an act of goodwill, when I started training the mind, one of the first things I began to realize is what stress I was causing for other people by not having a trained mind.
Mm-hmm.
In particular, I think of the Walmart clerks that I would impatiently, while I was waiting or whatever, lack of patience I'd have, I would inevitably bring that to somebody else's day, not knowing what their day was like, but if, you know, could you please hurry, or did you notice that mistake, or this type of thing. So when I think of the commitment I've made to work on my mind, it indirectly helps others because it causes less stress for them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You're so that's afraid. That's a form of goodwill, isn't it?
It is. Right. It is. No, it is.
Okay,
it definitely is. I mean, if you're not, you know, dropping it at somebody else's doorstep, it's always a good thing.
Yeah.
So I'm
saying the lack of a negative that I would bring into somebody else's day for working on my mind was helping that other person.
Absolutely.
Because otherwise I was a mess.
Well, I think as long as you're slugging at it, it's a good thing.
Huh?
Let me try another facet here. Okay, wishing goodwill is a willful act. Wishing goodwill is a willful act. When I read that, wishing somebody goodwill, it's definitely like gratitude and an unlimited attitude. So I always try to think of a metaphor or something, but I'm thinking sort of like a ray of sunshine, you know, or a ripple. You know, when you drop a pebble in, you know, you drop it in and the ripples just keep going out and radiating.
Yes.
So that unlimited kind of attitude where you have wishing goodwill, but much like dropping the stone in the pond to get the ripple, it has to start somewhere. The energy has to start somewhere. So I guess that's what you mean by the willful act.
Yeah. I think what I was trying to write about when I drafted that, and I'm some information I got from Ajahn Jeffrey, he cited that American philosopher William James that kind of broke up two kinds of truth, the truth of the observer and the truth of the will. You know, and the willful act is something that we use in our free choice. It's something that we can will. In golf, you'd will the ball in the hole. You say, I'm really going to make this putt.
Sure.
It could be called positive affirmation, but goodwill is something that's, it's not naturally there. We have to actually will it to be there. So we have to think about it. I think some of our natural reactions are, what's in this for me?
Sure.
And when you think about goodwill, you're immediately giving, so you're not taking.
Right.
And you're saying, I need to reach out here and think about others and think about their reliable happiness and wish them that they find the causes to that. So I look at it just like planning your day. It's something you need to do to will it and say that this is an important aspect of mine, because my mind's tendency is to take, and I need to flip it to giving. And one way to give is to wish others well and yourself well. Yeah. That's a generous gift right from the beginning.
It is. And I think too that it's when your heart is open like that and you're giving a goodwill towards somebody else, it's almost difficult or impossible to close it off and be bitter or
exactly. Or it's almost one way or the other.
It is. So it's like either you open the floodgates or you close the gates, but you can't have it both ways. You can't give and take at the same time.
Well, it's much like the gratitude thing. If we start with gratitude, we immediately flipped it the other way. And God knows, once you start working with your mind every day and that committee in your head and discussing it with admirable friends, you start to realize that most of my conversation is about what I'm getting out of this situation, what I expect out of this situation. All these stressors that we're experiencing have to do with the taking side. So willfully, we go the other way.
Yeah.
We flip it into goodwill. And I kind of found this out in my meditations because, again, Ajahn Jeffrey suggested that you start every meditation with goodwill. And it kind of zeroes out any ill will.
Yeah.
Now, I wasn't aware that I had any ill will, but my mind settled down a lot better when I started with goodwill. So obviously there was some subtle ill will there that I was able to wash out. So I've used it as a willful act in my meditations quite often, as well as during the day and when I wake up in the morning. Okay,
I like that unlimited attitude kind of thing about it. This kind of facet that I had problems with, and I know you and I discussed it, because I don't consider myself a strategic person, so I don't look at things in terms of strategy. So when I think of wishing goodwill as a strategy, I'm thinking, well, that takes planning and, you know.
Yeah.
So maybe and correct me if I'm wrong, I'm thinking of this perspective of goodwill as we care about ourselves, like in the adage, we care about ourselves in the adage that we want to do unto others as we would want them to do for us.
Right.
So when we realize that we harm others through thought, word, or deed, inevitably it has a negative consequence on us and it hinders our journey towards reliable happiness, right? It's sort of like the boomerang, right? Comes back to us, right? So the strategy, if I'm thinking about this correctly and understanding what you were trying to say to me, that's why you need to be careful. Caring for yourselves and putting yourself in the center, sort of, I don't know, I was kind of considering it narcissistic. So maybe you can help me out. That's what we talked about.
Well, I just look at it that it's that story with the Queen Malika. And the king asks the queen, who do you love most of all? And the queen says, myself. And the king looks at her and says, whoa. Then goes and asks the Buddha, did you hear what she said? And the Buddha says to the king, yeah, she's correct. And he goes, yeah, I think you're right. I do love myself first and foremost. Well, when you really take that to heart and you say, I love myself most, I care most about myself, then strategically you have to assume that everybody else feels the same way you do, that they care as much about themselves as you do about yourself. Therefore, you better treat them well strategically or they're going to come back. If anything that you do to gain their loss, you're creating an enemy.
A word just kind of popped up in my head when you said that, and it was respect. You almost respect them for honoring themselves,
right,
so to speak.
And that's a strategy. And that's something you have to be aware of. Again, we're so used to taking care of moi that you forget that they got a moi too.
That's right? True. But I don't know. I just always thought that was kind of narcissistic. Oh, I love myself. But it's not that kind of
no.
We're narcissistic
not talking about the
love.
Feeling it's... of love. We're talking about the preservation and the general care that accompanies being in your own skin.
Yeah.
And they you know, and again, being spending my life in business and realizing that, you know, it can get a little bloody.
Mm-hmm.
You have to respect that people care as much about themselves. So that's the strategy side. And the next kind of dimension, as you talked about with the different piece, was that goodwill not being necessarily a friendship. And I think this will be good for you because I've watched you develop this over the years and your ability to discern. Because knowing you, Carol, you were a goodwill to all. I mean, when we were first married, you were caring to everybody you came across. And you didn't really choose friends strategically. You were trying to be nice to everybody, which is a great kindness and the way goodwill should work. But how is that different from admirable friendship to you now?
Well, it certainly has the discernment quality in there because, I mean, you can wish somebody goodwill, a total stranger you could wish goodwill upon. You know, and what I thought of today is driving home from work is like traffic. Somebody cut me off.
Right.
And, you know, instead of just, you know, did you see that or just cussing them out or whatever, it's, you know, you can, you know.
So you now discern your admirable, that wishing goodwill, I guess fundamentally, is not as much a feeling to you anymore.
No, it's an action.
Yeah. So you're saying that you hope that that person, or you wish that that person finds the causes and acts upon those causes. Right? So that's not necessarily a condition that says that you you hope them to be happy and you love them or you care for them. Right? Because that would be almost impossible.
Right, because you can wish goodwill on a total stranger. You don't have to love them or care for them.
How would you ever wish goodwill on someone that's done bad acts?
Well, just hope that they find that relative happiness that we're all seeking that they probably haven't been exposed to.
But if you were looking at it from a feeling standpoint or a loving kindness side of goodwill.
Oh, it'd be an either or proposition. Then the judgment would come in, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it would. So this idea of hoping that they find the causes and act upon them is a much more clinical way of looking at a good wish for all.
Mm-hmm.
Not having ill will.
Correct. Yeah.
Right? But not necessarily liking them or being friends with them.
Right.
That came easy for me. You know, because I wasn't as friendly as you to kind of look at that. But I've watched you over the years really begin to discern the difference between your friendship and what that means.
And I will tell you that has served me much better, being a little more discerning.
Yeah.
I don't get burnt as much, I think.
I'm glad you said that.
Okay, well.
So finding the causes, we covered that. We pretty well have covered, let's see, the personal responsibility aspect.
No, we haven't done that yet.
Okay, well, go ahead.
And you know what? I like this because I have a bracelet that has the meta prayer on it.
Okay.
The meta, which is goodwill.
Yeah.
This is a different version of it, but basically it's may all living beings be happy, free from stress and pain, free from animosity, free from oppression, free from trouble. May they look after themselves with ease. And when you wrote up this particular phrase, the last statement you said was key because we're wishing that all beings be happy and able to look after themselves with ease. We're hoping that they find the tools and the elements that they need that can lead them to be reliably happy.
Yes.
So, I think that's what that's kind of key because I guess you don't want somebody so dependent on you for their happiness. You'll never, I mean, that'll always fall short.
Yes.
So if they can find their own reliably happiness and feel confident from within, I mean, how could you not wish that for somebody if you cared for them?
That covers the personal responsibility, the non-harming. There's a classical wish there. May no one harm anyone else or despise anyone else or wish them harm. And again, that's just so tied into the strategic side. You know, why would you wish anybody harm? Because they're going to come back and cause problems for you. Again, if you have your interest in mind, wishing them goodwill and opening your mind is a much more... that's why the Buddha's got that in the wisdom category.
I know.
So smart.
It is clever. It really is.
It's changed my life, I can tell you that, because it's something that I think about and that I will to happen. Lastly, before we open it up for callers...
Well, can I go back to this no harming goodwill thing?
Yeah.
That we wish... I guess... Gosh, I'm thinking of grudges, holding a grudge. You know, when I think back of holding a grudge...
Now we're really getting to the core issues.
No. I'm trying to recall back.
Okay, go ahead.
Years and years and years, honey. Don't worry about it. When I think about it, it's the person that I was holding a grudge over never really felt the pain of the grudge. It was more me that was harming myself. So it just was like so pointless. So I was harming myself. I wasn't, you know.
Now there's another dimension that we didn't even put in the outline.
Can you write that down?
That's called the boomerang effect. I like that. Okay, lastly, we're going to close with stress as our teacher, our mistakes. This is an interesting thing. You know, when people come into Fort Worth meditation, I always ask them, do you play a role in your stress? And all the hands go up. Yes, I think I play a role in my stress. Then I say, how many believe that we learn from our mistakes? And all the hands go up. Everybody recognizes through life that we learn from mistakes.
Absolutely.
So then the last question I ask is, how many believe that stress is our teacher? Very few hands go up. I get these looks.
Yeah, what's with that?
And I say, well, think about it. Number one, we say that we're playing a role in our stress.
Yeah.
Right? Which means we made a mistake, right? Number two, we learn from our mistakes. But number three turns around and says, I don't want to learn from my stress. So the denial is implied right in the answer. This is the way we live our life. We ignore the stresses.
I know. It's
we so want to be satisfied.
It defies logic.
It does. But, you know, we defy, we want to be happy so bad and so short term that we ignore the elephant under our nose.
Right.
You know,
right.
And I think it's also because of the way we handle our mistakes. It's that whole personal side of things.
Oh, gosh.
We're to
blame.
Nobody
can beat ourselves up more than we can.
Oh, nobody can do that more than we can. So that whole idea of learning how to separate the action from the persona.
But that's also part of the goodwill towards ourselves.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, that
you've got to be able to separate those two.
Well, right, because if you, and I used to, and I guess, you know, it's the old upbringing, you know, used to say, oh, giving a free pass. No, don't, you know, you can't give them a free pass. It's like, well, yeah, you can give yourself a free pass. It's that allowance and permission to give yourself a free pass. That's hard for me to do, or has been hard for me to do. That's a learning process.
Yeah.
Because I just, you know.
Just remember that story of the vase.
Right? Oh, go ahead. Tell that story of the vase, because I like that one.
All right. You go to the store window, and you walk by the store window, and a vase falls over. And you look at it and go, oh, isn't that too bad? It crashed.
Because you're outside the window looking in,
yeah.
Right?
Then all of a sudden, same situation. You buy the vase, you bring it home. It falls on the floor. It hurts a little more, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Well, the only difference between the two situations is the fact that you've now owned that vase.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to learn to separate our ownership with some of the mistakes, with some of the actions of the past that were unskillful, and they can be looked at more clinically.
Well, another thing, too, is when we practice that goodwill towards ourselves, you know, is beating ourselves up and feeling guilt, shame, or remorse, it does no good to have those feelings piled on. And when we do that, we certainly miss the opportunity to open up our when we beat ourselves up, we lose the learning opportunity to open ourselves up and ask the questions, you know, where did I intend to harm? Was it through my words? Was it through my actions? How could I speak in a different way? How could I act in a different way? So that in itself is using that judicious and judgmental component.
I'll tell you what we should do. I think we should take a break.
Okay.
A 1 minute break, if the gentlemen at the station can help us with this before we take on callers, and we'll see if anyone is willing to talk through their experience with goodwill or ill will or stress. And we'd love to hear from our callers.
Absolutely. I'd love to. Love to do it.
So let's take a break. Alex from Texas. I wonder what Alex this is. How can we help you today?
Hey, Carol. Just want to say great show. Love hearing you guys. I guess since you all had started off saying what you were grateful for, I might as well speak to what I'm grateful for. And very grateful to be a part and listen to discussions like this and forums that deal with these sorts of topics. Very helpful to my own personal practice, but I think it would be great for anybody just looking to get the most out of life and learn more. So thank you both. My question was more on the topic of goodwill. I'll just ask the question and take myself off. Do you see goodwill as something almost throughout the day? I have found that there might be a difference between wishing goodwill over the course of a day many times versus just, living a life of goodwill and committing to that sort of a practice is really the... the initial and only really exerting force towards goodwill. If I were to start my day and come with an attitude of looking at my actions and really trying to be mindful of myself, is it necessary to wish goodwill in other times during the day to accompany that overall kind of mentality towards, if I'm observing and being, holding goodwill to myself, that it's naturally going to be out to everybody else?
Sure. Well, I think that's kind of like a two-prong approach to this. I think much like gratitude, you can open up your heart in the morning by saying, I wish goodwill, like almost like the meta phrase, I wish no harm to others, and I hope that they can proceed with their life with ease and learn the tools as well. But also, I think during the day, there's a lot of mindfulness bells and opportunities to practice goodwill because every situation is different, So I think that habitually helps you so that it just becomes ingrained so that what you're saying in the morning is just more continuous throughout the day. I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's a big picture and a small picture. I think you're having the... by the way, thanks for that comment, Alex, and the question. But I think it is the big picture and then the smaller picture as things come up during the day, as they arise. Personally, I also am on the watch for ill will.
Ah.
So when I see ill will arise during the day, I counteract it with goodwill.
That's a good point.
So Alex may not have as much ill will as I have.
No.
We're all different, and there's all different triggers, and there's all different events.
That's why I think I said there's all different opportunities to implement it during the day.
Yeah, and they're different strategies.
Because it comes with different faces, different under different guises.
But certainly having the what I would call the reset button at the beginning of the day is a great strategy, Alice.
Yes, love that.
I like the big picture, and I certainly love the intention that supports that. It gives me a warm feeling when you said that.
I'm glad you like that.
So.
I'll make
okay,
a note.
Let's
that.
Take another call. We have.
Okay. Do we have somebody else out there that wants to talk?
Ian on line two. Ian, welcome to Admirable Friends.
Hey.
Hey, Ian.
I wanted to share some experience and also I did have a follow up question, but you've kind of answered that in your conversation with Alex. I wanted to say that when I'm in a very high stress situation, for me, goodwill has come to mind. I've noticed that the reason for my stress is that I'm often focusing very much on me. I'm worried about what might happen to me, whether it will be imagined or real. I give an example of having to do a presentation in front of a lot of people, and with this situation, when I noticed that I was worrying completely about me, quite narcissistically in some ways, and I turned that round and I wished goodwill on the people in the room, it had a very calming effect on me, and helped me proceed with some success. And so my follow-up question was going to be, I find it, this is a good reminder, high-level stress is a good reminder for me. I use it now to bring goodwill to mind for both myself and others. And you were talking about, maybe you could come up with some more tips or some less obvious things what would remind people to bring goodwill to mind.
Well, thanks, Ian. First of all, thanks for sharing your how you practice. And always talking in first person. It's really good to hear your story. Secondly, I think the thoughts or the different practices, you hit the nail on the head when you said that the common denominator is me. I think that the taking and the me is... the number one cause of stress. There's something in it for me. Something's, you know, what do I want out of this situation? So, you know, you have to subtly be aware of stress. Now, I've worked stress through my body, which, you know, you'd think I'm the type of person that might just do it logically, but I began working through stress through my body because my first teacher helped me work with anger and asked me to define what anger felt like, which was a real challenge. I looked at him cross-eyed when he said, what does anger feel like? But in any case, I watch my body and I watch tensions in my body, and that's the beginning of where there's stress. And then I begin looking, listening in my head, what's going on, what are my thoughts, and there's usually that wanting mind, wanting something to be different, that's accompanying that. And it's not a specific goodwill at that point, but it is a letting go of holding on to something, you know, wanting that person to do something differently. And then just the respect, I think, Carol, you said it best, that respect issue is something that I just generally think about, you know, respect that person.
You know what I was thinking when Ian was saying like little things throughout the day that kind of generate the goodwill? I'm thinking of like courtesies, little small courtesies and random acts of kindness. Because I find out in my own practice, in my own daily life, when I start doing little things, small as like making eye contact with somebody in the hall, giving them a smile, good morning, mentioning their name, you know, just holding the door for somebody or just doing something that someone doesn't think that you've noticed.
Yeah.
You know, it just seems to broaden that whole goodwill feeling. Like I feel like I've done something nice.
And you're not going to let any ill will into your mind.
No,
with that
because
kind
while
of
you're
movement.
Giving, you can't hang on to anything.
You know that I was once told there's two aspects of the practice. There's the developing side and then there's the abandoning side.
Yeah.
That means developing good mind qualities and abandoning unskillful mind qualities.
Sure.
So I think what you're talking about, Carol, is developing, you know, mind qualities. And that's what's great, because you don't have to do as much letting go of the unskillful mind qualities, because you're filling that jar up with little things.
You're making that's
a great way to practice.
That discerning choice to make that good, skillful choice.
Or small acts of goodwill.
Yeah, I think so. I hope that answered Ian's question.
Yeah. We've got a note from a caller saying that we cut out on audio. I don't know what's happened, but maybe they can help us at the radio station.
Okay. Did we have somebody else, or are we kind of just...
I don't know. It says I got a text saying that we've cut out on audio. So
that's interesting.
We'll have to just keep talking and hope that it comes back, I guess. I do like that, which you talked about, Carol. I could do more of that myself. That's a great tip.
Well, and I can't recall it. And if there's some Texas Aggies out there, or it was something about the 10-20 rule. I'll have to look it up for everybody for next something. But they said within 20 feet, you make eye contact. And within 10 feet, you, make a verbal, you say something verbal to them.
Yeah.
And that's sort of like a culture thing that they've got going on. But boy, I put that to the test, and it's amazing how it works.
Yeah, I think that's great, because I put my head down a lot when I'm working. I don't even acknowledge people. So that 10-foot rule is a great.
I'm going to look it up for the people next week.
It's Texas A&M.
I think it's A&M. But no, I did hear that, and I feel bad that I don't have the specifics. I will get that next week. But of course, if anybody knows of that, but it's amazing. Another thing is, when you call people by name, like if you don't say just good morning and you say good morning, Joe, or good morning, buddy, people are really struck by their name. They really respond well when they hear their name.
Yeah. Boy, I'm learning more from you on this radio show than we do normally.
I am. Oh, well, just stay tuned for the upcoming weeks.
No, I think we have a lot of callers calling in. They're saying at the studio, the
Perfect.
Lines are buzzing and they're screwing things up. But this is good.
Oh, I'm sorry. Gee, I'm sorry, radio station.
We'll have to listen to the tape, but I don't think we did that bad this first time.
I'm having a ball. Of course, I always enjoy talking to you. So I just, the fact that I'm doing it, you know, in front of all these people is.
I think that is cool. We should be grateful to each other for doing this.
Well, I'm certainly grateful to you.
Okay, we're ready for another call. He says every line is trying to call in.
Okay, so who do we have next?
I'm not sure who we have. I guess we've got, hold on a second, Jay on line 3. Jay, welcome to Admirable Friends.
Hi, Jay. Thanks for calling in. Jay?
Hello, it's AJ.
Oh.
AJ.
Hello.
Yes.
Hey.
Hey,
hello,
what are you doing?
Dad.
Did you say dad on the air?
Glad to hear you guys.
From Jacksonville, Florida, we have to hear from our son on a radio talk show.
I tell you.
Number one son.
Yes.
Go ahead, kid.
Sunshine.
What's up?
Sunshine State. Well, I just wanted to at least share. I thought there was a good point being brought up with the aspect of respect in conversation. And I guess I wanted to share a little bit of my experience, or let's say something that I kind of try to become very conscious of in my interactions, at least with people. I think in the last year, I kind of tried to make more of a focus to be more of a partner almost in a conversation that I have with people, regardless of whatever the topic is or who the person is that, you know, I guess this is in a response of, I guess I was noticing that when I have conversations with people that there's, you know, some people dominate a conversation. And you can listen, and, you know, maybe at the end of the conversation, you're like, wow, I really didn't contribute a whole lot to that. And, you know, I didn't necessarily want people to walk away from a conversation with that feeling. So I try very hard to consciously, you know, ask questions and be engaged, not necessarily phony or anything, but try to really be 50-50 in how a conversation is conducted as a kind of a mutual respect and shared communication.
Nice.
Great. Thanks, AJ, for sharing that.
And, yeah, that was really...
Thank you.
It is
that was nice.
Good. Thanks. And
your parents must be very proud of you for doing that.
It was just a little thing, and it was a response. It was a response to actually it was my boss that I had a year ago actually that prompted me being more aware of it, because he absolutely bullied conversations, and I don't think it was that he disrespected my time or anything like that. It just, I never felt like it was a very shared experience, and I didn't want other people to leave conversations with me with the same mind state. So.
I think what's key, what you just said, very small. It was something that you did was very small. And I don't want people to think that these acts have to be very over the top, you know, huge. I mean, it's just like random acts of kindness. The smallest little shift, like in the conversation or the act, can reap huge benefits.
Yeah.
Well, I'm finding that it's also having me more aware of what's going on in the conversation as well, that I'm kind of listening more intently. Because my main interest is to be more kind of involved with what's taking place. But thank you again for the topic. Very interesting stuff.
Good stuff, AJ. Thanks for calling. We appreciate it.
No problem. Let's Linda's back on the line. Let's take Linda.
Welcome back, Linda.
Linda, hi, how are you?
Welcome back. We lost you and now you're back.
Three times, but that's okay. Hey. Quickly, I just wanted to thank you for the statement, quiet the mind, because that is exactly this past week, trying to implement the first 2 weeks discussion.
Yes.
Talking about, actually just thinking about the mind as almost a separate part of me, which it is, of course, but almost like maybe a second person. And so when I'm actively thinking about quieting the mind, what happened yesterday was I went into work and this lady had a cake plate on her desk. And I was in the kitchen and she brought the cake plate in and she said, I can't believe someone put this on my desk. It still has icing on it. And all of a sudden I went, quiet the mind. And you know, really just like said it right out loud, you know, in my head. And I went to her and I said, it's okay. Just forgive. Just forgive. Hmm. And she kind of stopped for a second and she said, okay, you know. And otherwise, we would have been going round and round about who did it and why they did it and why they didn't do it and blah, 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 blah. So
you truncated it and you...
Yeah, we got 60 seconds left. Linda, thank you for sharing that story with us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And what really means most to hear, Linda, is that the last 2 weeks has actually given you some meat to practice with. That really makes me feel good to say that there's some content here that's relevant to people's lives.
It's doable.
Consumable. These conversations do help. I know we started down at Fort Worth Meditation with the conversations, and hopefully this format will continue because we just have to be able to shift from what has amounted to, in a lot of cases, is just not meaning that much.
Well, we have to shift, like Linda said, from the cake plate with the frosting to something a little more little more substance.
And she did it. She made the shift and she saw the experience, and it's that simple. And then, you know, meditation serves a derivative of that need. You know, when you start to learn how to just better manage your mind and manage your activities, everything else fits in well. The meditation makes perfect sense.
Well,
okay.
Can I just say before we run out of time, thank you to everybody that was out there, those that maybe called in and didn't get a chance to speak. You could email us.
Hello@admirablefriends.org.
Hello@admirablefriends.org. If you have a question that you didn't get a chance to ask tonight, please feel free to email us just so we could address that. And we apologize if we didn't get to you, but we're just...
And thanks for those that tuned in tonight.
Yeah.
Appreciate all of you being out there. This has been great. I apologize for our naivety with this thing, but Carol, you did great. I'm proud of you.
I'm proud of you, too. High five.
Take care, all. See you next week.
All righty. Good night, everybody.
Bye, admirable friends.